You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Kia ora. My name's Tadhg Stopford. I'm a father, teacher, medical educator, and a really concerned citizen. I'm standing for the mayoralty of Auckland, the position in Waitemata and Gulf, and the position that I really have my heart on is as a member of Auckland District Health Board, where I can drive hemp medicine into our District Health Board from the top rather than below, which is what I've been doing for the last 2 years, teaching 650 medical professionals how to use cannabis as a medicine and a food.
Right, so you mentioned there that you are standing as a mayoral candidate, however, your main priority is with the ADHB, the Auckland District Health Board. Why then run as a mayoral candidate as well?
Oh, it's pretty funny, really. I was in the council office paying my $200 for the ADHB nomination, and JT had just wound me up that day with his talk about beginning the privatisation of water care, and you know, you're in it to win it. But also in our democracy, you just have to raise a voice. And sometimes that means money and effort, you know, to have the chance to have ideas heard. So So I have strong ideas on the shape of this city. I have strong ideas about the direction of our country. And while I have no expectation of being elected mayor, you know, for $200, I get a chance to talk about how we can fund our infrastructure through issuing municipal bonds to global investors who are desperate for safe havens for their money. And if anyone wants to take that policy and run with it, then I'd love to see that instead of rate rises across New Zealanders or Aucklanders who don't make much money and can't afford, you know, to keep on digging into their pockets for taxes with the incredible cost of living here.
Certainly. In your candidate profile statement, you said that we need to face the future and our society is unsustainable and not serving us. Does your approach to this statement change across the three positions that you are standing for?
No, I think it's... I mean, look, we all know. We all know that the world is unsustainable. We all know that our economy is built on prosperous foundations that are poisoning us. We all know that we have an addiction to petrochemicals and we don't know how to stop it. And I think that's a cause of anxiety for a lot of people. It's a cause of anxiety for me. I worry about my children. I worry about our community. I worry about the future. And so I think it's important that we address the models and we begin to make changes and we move away from those toxic, poisoned foundations. And there are things we can do, but they're not being discussed. And so that's why I threw my hat in those rings.
On all the profiles, it's linked to the Hemp Foundation, and you mentioned it towards the start of the interview, bringing in hemp or cannabis medicine into DHBs and solutions. For those who see this as kind of a single issue candidacy, do you have a response?
Yeah, it's absolutely. It's not a single issue. What it is a transformational issue. A transformational issue. So we are built upon a petrochemical foundation and we are built upon a pharmaceutical foundation. One of them is poisoning us and dooming our children. The other one is bankrupting us and failing to treat the chronic health conditions which are bankrupting us. So those two models are incredibly profitable and fatal. They're actually harmful to us, even though many people are becoming incredibly wealthy off it. As a community, they're harmful to us, and we're a truck heading for a mountain. So the issue of hemp is transformational because we can move from a petrochemical and pharmaceutical foundation to a carbohydrate foundation, and that's a foundation that we build and we grow. And from that, food, fiber, medicine, top quality in every category, basis for manufacturing, basis for industry.
Do you think that some of the messages that you perhaps bring to the table around this, around creating industry, around creating economic chance, get dismissed because of kind of the idea of it being a single issue?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're all resistant to change, and we all know what we know. And the thing is, because people respond on reflex, but I've taught over 650 medical professionals now in the last 2 years, and over 90% of them support everything that I'm about and that the Hemp Foundation's about. And that's because they've seen the evidence. So for all of those people who respond in the negative to the subject, the basic problem is they don't understand it. You know, hemp is an unknown field in this country. People don't know what it is, really, and they really don't know what its potential is. We don't need medical cannabis. All we need is hemp. That's it. We don't need marijuana grown behind razor wires. All we need is hemp grown all across the Canterbury Plains, grown anywhere that we can, and top quality food, top quality fiber, top quality chemical feedstock, and top quality medicine.
So, you've alluded to it, but I'm just going to put it plainly. How would hemp, as an election issue, benefit the Tamaki Makaurau area?
Well, it's for us, personally, I think it's about brand validation. You know, we live in New Zealand. What is New Zealand? We market ourselves as clean and green, but we're not. We're patently not. We are just running the same old, you know, US model of development that is destroying our habitat. So if we want to validate our brand proposition and to be a progressive country, a world-leading country, then we need to find a way to live our brand. So we need to be clean, we need to be green, we need to be sustainable, we need to be healthy, and ideally we'll be profitable as well.
How can you see, or do you see, a way that hemp can help facilitate transformational changes to other issues like transport or amenities that are kind of not necessarily related, but do you think it provides a kind of foundation that we don't necessarily have, or an opportunity that will then provide us with other opportunities in other areas that may be unrelated?
I don't think I see that in terms of public transport. For public transport, my policy is quite straightforward. I'd like to re-pedestrianise. The mayor has very little power, but as a general statement of intent, I think that European cities like Den Haag and Utrecht in Holland, where the public are valued over private transport, they're really livable cities. So I'd like to see something like that in Auckland. And I'd like to see proper public transport, ideally something like trams, again, something that really serves communities, hop on, hop off. And again, that stuff can be funded through infrastructure bonds, I believe. Global capital is desperate for safe havens. Treasuries are tanking. Stock markets are tanking. But, you know, we invest in productive assets that are necessary for our city to grow, that will be used by a growing population. And then those revenues can be earmarked for repaying the investment bonds 10, 20, 30 years down the track. At the end of the day, capital is desperate for somewhere safe to put its money. We're potentially facing another Great Depression.
Certainly, I believe the phrase is capital gathers capital. Essentially, something along the lines of that. You've mentioned the term livable there, and I think that could be possibly woven through a lot of the things that you've said. What does it mean to be a livable city?
Oh, for me, a livable city means, we kind of had one when I was a kid, you know, where public transport wasn't too expensive, where you had time to spend with friends and family, where you were... When I sound ancient now, but I'm only 45, you know, when I was a kid, we had a little bit more infrastructure than we needed. And for most of my life, we've had less than we needed because we've abandoned our responsibilities. So for me, livable means being able to enjoy where you live, as opposed to having to bend yourself backwards to live and survive there.
When you say we've abandoned our responsibilities, what does that mean, and what responsibilities do you think the role of someone on the ADHB or the mayoral the role of being mayor should have and or should instill in the city that they are kind of working to better?
A great question. They're two very different roles. So the mayoralty, I would like to see the mayor be a real cheerleader for change. If we look at someone like Greta Thunberg, you know, that 16-year-old girl who's called out, you know, the leaders of the world and the leaders of every city in the world as basically not mature enough to face the challenges that threaten us, you know, then I think our mayor should be saying much the same thing and signaling clearly to business that business as usual will not continue. So we can't just raise taxes on plastics. We can't just raise taxes on petrol. I mean, we could, but it's silly. Why don't we incentivize people? Why don't we allow incentives for alternate models? You know, because it's very difficult for anything to compete against an incumbent because the incumbent dominates. So we need to set up incentives for challenges. We need to set up incentives for status quo industries to change. And we need to clearly signal that a stick is coming and that, for example, San Francisco has got rid of plastic bottles. Right? We could signal that. We could say we're getting rid of plastic bottles. Coca-Cola, you'll need to put them in glass. You know, within Auckland, we're going to have 10 cents or 5 cents on cans and bottles for recycling. I used to make money as a kid doing that. You know, we've got plenty of poor people who could be making a little bit more money by picking up litter and recycling and allowing us to recycle resources that otherwise simply go to waste. These, to me, seem like quite basic things that we're not doing. You know, we need to reduce waste, improve efficiencies. The Norwegians import rubbish. They're so good at recycling. What are we doing? We're stockpiling ours because we can't ship it off to China anymore. Why don't we actually do things properly? Build proper recycling, have proper incentives for it, and link everything in so that industry knows that unsustainable practices where we citizens carry the costs and the, you know, struggle with the problems of their waste, you know, will not be allowed. So that's the mayoralty thing. Just signaling, taking a moral position and just signaling what's going to happen and trying to get popular support behind that. For the ADHB, it's quite different. I've taught doctors about a physiological system that they didn't know existed. 89% of doctors don't know about the thing that keeps us well and protects us from injury and illness. That's amazing. It's not taught in medical schools. It's called your endocannabinoid system. So if I was to get into ADHB, I would be in a position to drive that education into our medical profession from above by seeking to get the Auckland District Health Board to align as an objective the education of our entire profession in Auckland so that we can maximize the potential.
Certainly. I think there was something interesting earlier that you said is that you have these policies for the mayoral candidacy, and looking through them, I had a conversation last year or earlier this year discussing policies with a policy analyst going forward for Auckland, and a lot of these kind of overlap, which is incredibly interesting. I don't know where I'm going with this one.
It happens,
it does indeed. That's the joy of editing. So with the ADHB, you're talking about driving this education in. Do you think that it, obviously this is an issue that's like clearly at your heart in terms of looking at hemp and the importance of hemp, and I wouldn't just say heart as well, I think it's a well thought out issue for you, from what I understand. For those who see this as kind of like a one person passion project, what does the mainstreaming of hemp in medical education mean? And how can we say this isn't just another kind of medical trend that we've seen in the past, kind of overseas as well, that people have tried to drive into education systems around health before?
Well, because it's a... how would you put it? You don't know what you don't know. Agnogenesis is the creation of ignorance. So we have been made ignorant as a society. In fact, you know, white people as a whole have been treated like mushrooms, and we've been turned into dummies on this field. It's just a classic bait and switch. We have 28,000 years of recorded use of hemp and cannabis as medicines in multiple cultures across the world. The reason for its valuable use in multiple conditions is because our body makes and needs cannabis-like molecules to be well. And if we don't make them, we die. Very simple. So what's really interesting is these cannabis molecules inside our body, their role is to actually maintain normal function. So if we have chronic migraine, fibromyalgia, arthritis, irritable bowel syndrome, those things, for example, there's evidence that patients with those conditions aren't making enough of their own cannabis molecules. So how do you fix that?
Why would you say it's been excluded till now? Why have we been ignorant of this as an issue in medical practice?
Well, the endocannabinoid system was only discovered in 1995, and the nature of change in any large organization, let alone, you know, sort of cartels, is slow. But there has been... There was a lot of work done in the 70s and 80s by the pharmaceutical industry to synthesize cannabis, because if you synthesize cannabis, you make it new, or cannabinoids, and that means you can patent them, and that means you can charge a premium for them. But those synthesized compounds didn't work out so well, and you can't patent a plant. So the focus has... I mean, it's incredibly well documented. Once you get into this field... the textbooks cost $500. That's one reason why more people don't know about it, because you need to spend $500 on a book that talks about it. And it's a specialized niche field within medicine, which is a very large field, but it's fundamental. And you face resistance. Because it's illegal, there hasn't been research done. The research that has been done often doesn't fit what the medical model demands, which is randomized controlled trials. But randomized controlled trials don't actually fit with hemp or cannabis, simply because normal pharmaceuticals contain one active pharmaceutical ingredient, but the plant contains several hundred. And the ratios are relevant to treatment. So there simply hasn't been the work done, but part of that is inertia, part of that is the challenges of legality, and part of that is the fact that industry does not want the competition.
Back to the Merrill front, actually just in general, if you could get the listeners and or voters to remember three things about what you stand for, what would those three things be?
The three things I stand for are responsibility, collective responsibility for our future. And I'd even stretch it out. Collective responsibility for a prosperous future. Because in my 45 years of life, I reckon I've just seen most of the main indicators pointing down, and I don't think I've seen anything that says that's going to change. So collective responsibility for the future, win-wins. I'm about win-wins. I'm about carrots. I'm about sticks. You know, let's lead each other to better models, and let's try not to create any losers on the way. You know, let's try and lift all boats as we go. And with transformational things like this, I believe there's a possibility like that. The third thing, what would the third thing be? just the health and wealth of all people.
It's really interesting. I've talked to quite a few people and about what they want to be remembered for in a candidacy. And a lot of people say leadership, and a lot of people say kind of transparency and trust. Why is collective responsibility? You kind of discussed it before, but collective responsibility is one that I haven't heard a lot. What makes it so important to you, and is it important across all three positions that you're standing for? And how would that differ across all three positions that you're standing for?
Oh, that's an excellent question. I'm not sure how to answer it. So for me, collective responsibility means moving away from being consumers to being citizens. The problem with that is that being a citizen is work. You know, you need to be informed. It's difficult to be informed these days. And being a citizen is about being responsible. It's not just about rights to consume and be this or be that. It's about the responsible actions to be part of creating the society that you want to be part of. And I just think in my lifetime, I've seen us be told that we're consumers so much that we've become consumers, and we've given up our power as individuals, and we've given up on a vision for our country, and we've sort of just left it to people who really don't seem to have had much of a vision, really, apart from just, you know, rolling on with the status quo, pretty much.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.